Welcome to City Club of Eugene's January 11th, 2019 program, State of the University of Oregon with President Michael Schill. This is the 16th program of the 2018-2019 programming year. I'm Joel Curran, President of City Club. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Our diamond sponsors are Kaiser Permanente. Kaiser Permanente exists to provide high quality, affordable health care services and to improve the health of our members and the communities we serve. More information at www.kp.org. And our second diamond sponsor is the University of Oregon. Since 1876, the UO has helped Oregonians question critically, think logically, reason effectively, communicate more clearly than I do, act creatively, and live ethically. More information at uoregon.edu. And our Sapphire sponsor, Palo Alto Software. For more than 20 years, Palo Alto Software has had a commitment to educating and empowering entrepreneurs and small businesses. With their headquarters in Eugene, they are best known for LivePlan, a lean planning software tool. More information at paloalto.com. Eugene is a college town, and the relationship between the city and the university goes back to the very beginning. On December 30th, the UO published an editorial in the Sunday paper, "At UO, there's much to cheer for in 2019. In the 70s, Eugene residents ran produce sales, church socials, and fundraisers to support the university. That was the 1870s. The $27,500 raised from those sales purchased 18 acres to become the University of Oregon campus. 150 years later, that relationship has grown and improved. I don't know whether you know this, but the University of Oregon is only one of two universities in the Northwest that are a member of the prestigious Association of American Universities, which comprises the leading public and private research universities in the country. Only 60 other universities in the United States and two in Canada are members of this organization. Eugene is also a major driver, the U of O is also a major driver in the economy, with over 10,000 employees, over $350 million in salaries, and $427 million doing business in Eugene. Michael Schill is the 18th president of the University of Oregon. He was appointed by the trustees on July 1st, 2015. President Schill has launched a series of initiatives to advance the university's three priorities: enhancing academic and research excellence, supporting student access and success, and improving campus experience and diversity. In 2016, Schill announced the launch of the historic Phil and Penny Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact, a groundbreaking billion-dollar initiative to transform science and innovation at the U of O. Professor Schill also holds a tenured faculty appointment at the University of Oregon School of Law. Prior to coming to Eugene, President Schill was the Henry Wyatt Professor of Law at the University of Chicago Law School, a nationally recognized expert in property and real estate. He is the author of three books and is the co-author with three others of his book, a casebook, Property, which is one of the best-selling textbooks or casebooks in law schools. President Schill started out teaching property law, and after trying to teach our board member Josh Burstein property law, he went into administration and has been a big success ever since. Now, old habits die hard, and as some of you know, I am a retired lawyer and spent a dreadful first year in property law ducking the professor who was trying to call on me. So if you see me ducking down while I'm sitting at the table, it's just because old habits die hard. President Schill.
Thank you, Joel. I'll try not to call on you, but I can't promise that for everybody out there. I'd like to thank you all for inviting me today to talk about the University of Oregon and our important relationship with the city of Eugene, our region, and our state. Like the City Club, the University of Oregon is committed to open inquiry that advances our society, and I look forward to a really great discussion today. I'm pleased to be back at the City Club. When I was initially appointed the president of the University of Oregon, one of the first places I gave a talk was here at the City Club, and I indicated several priorities, and now 3.5 years later, I'm really pleased to be able to come back and talk to you a little bit about our progress on those objectives and then some new ones that have come up. Now, before I talk about some of the great things that are happening at the University of Oregon, I'd like to take a moment to comment on our mutually beneficial relationship between the University of Oregon and the city of Eugene, a relationship that has existed for over 150 years. It's obviously, no town-gown relationship doesn't have some friction from time to time. But I genuinely believe that Eugene, Lane County, and the Southern Willamette Valley are vital components of what we might think of as our secret sauce that makes the University of Oregon a world-class university that it is today. A university that is on a trajectory upwards to new levels of excellence and strength that will benefit not just the region, but the entire state of Oregon. Now, this place, this community matters. When we talk to students about why they come to the University of Oregon, when we recruit faculty to the University of Oregon and administrators, living in Eugene is frequently mentioned as a major plus. People are attracted by the bucolic nature of our community, by our culture of progressive engagement, and also by the opportunity to live in a community that is both attractive, affordable, and safe. We understand that the University of Oregon plays an integral role in supporting the region's economy. The role is going to grow. It's going to grow and grow and strengthen as the Phil and Penny Knight campus for accelerating scientific impact begins to take root and flourishes. And also, as we welcome the world to Eugene in 2021 for the track and field World Championships. We're all fortunate and we all prosper because of that strong and symbiotic relationship between the U of O and the city of Eugene. And since arriving in Eugene, I have been delighted to find our mayor and our city manager, as well as our council, to be wonderful partners. Now, none of us should take that relationship for granted. Instead, just like a marriage, we all need to work diligently to preserve and nurture the relationship. Now, I'd like to make a transition and talk a little bit about some of the exciting things that are happening at the University of Oregon. And I want to start by talking about the priorities that I set forth when I arrived on campus 3.5 years ago. Now, during my tenure at the university, I have been laser focused on making the University of Oregon a better and better university, to enhance our ability to teach future generations and to create and generate impactful research. Now, while we've made, I think, tremendous progress over the past 3.5 years towards achieving these objectives, they remain our fundamental priorities. We want the University of Oregon to be the very best public research university that it can be, to benefit our students, to benefit our city, to benefit our state, and indeed the world. To do that, we continue to strive to build our academic and research excellence, to improve student access and success, and also to enhance our students' experience and create a diverse and inclusive environment for them. Now, for each of these priorities, we have taken major leaps forward, but we still have lots to accomplish. We are not done. For that, to accomplish those objectives, we need the support of the community. We need your support. We need you, who already understand, you're here today, the importance of higher education to the future of our society. We need to help the rest of the people in the state of Oregon to understand that, to understand how vital great research universities are to all of our futures. Let me start by talking about student access and success. Educating students from every walk of life remains our primary mission at the University of Oregon. We are committed to making sure that every qualified Oregonian student who wants to attend the U of O has a path for doing so. We want the University of Oregon to be the school of choice for the state's best and brightest. We want the University of Oregon to be the school of choice for everyone who is the first in their family to go to college. And we want the University of Oregon to be the school of choice for graduates of our community colleges and for our returning veterans. In order to achieve that goal, that inclusive goal, that goal of access, we have many merit and needs-based scholarships. And in particular, we have a wonderful scholarship called the Pathway Oregon Scholarship. We just celebrated this year the 10th anniversary of Pathway Oregon. This groundbreaking program provides full tuition and fees for academically qualified, Pell-eligible Oregonians. I want to emphasize the profound impact Pathway Oregon has. It is focused not just on providing free education to Oregonians from low-income families, and it does that, but it's also designed to allow people who are the first in their families to go to college. It's designed for underrepresented minorities. It is designed to help those folks who may not be as familiar with universities to succeed, to really flourish at the University of Oregon, and then to become leaders in the community. We add to the full scholarship wraparound services like advising, intensive advising, tutoring, and academic support. It's made a huge difference. Pathway Oregon was the first program of its type in the state, and to date, more than 5,000 Oregonians have received a free education at the University of Oregon thanks to this program. This fall, we welcomed our most diverse class of freshmen ever. 36% are racial or ethnic minorities. It is also the second most academically prepared class in our history. Now, getting here is just the beginning, of course. Oregon has a problem, and we all know it. It has a problem in funding K-12 education and undergraduate education. And that funding has implications for our students. Too few of our students graduate, and some that do are not well prepared for future employment. One critical way to address this is for the state of education to provide better funding for our schools. Another way is for us to be smarter in the way that we support our students at the University of Oregon. So we have invested in student success with new programs, new initiatives, and soon a wonderful new building called Tykeson Hall, after Don and Willie Tykeson, which is under construction right next to my building in the heart of our campus. What we're doing in Tykeson Hall is something revolutionary. We are reimagining how to advise students by combining academic advising with career advising, because we understand people choose courses with an eye to what they're going to do when they graduate. We want students from the day one when they come to our school to be thinking about what they're going to do the day they leave our school. And to make that happen, we are hiring this year 25 new advisors to work in that building, to advise our students, to bring our student to advisor ratio from 800 to 1 to 300 to 1, which is the industry standard. Now, even before Tykeson Hall is complete, we have already increased our four-year graduation rate from 49% to 56%. That's the best in the state, but it isn't good enough by a long shot. What we need to do is we need to double down on our efforts. This is the future of the state, and we all need to work to make that happen. Now, let me talk a little bit about academic and research efforts. As we move into 2019, 2020 is just over the horizon, and with 2020 is the opening of the Phil and Penny Knight Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact. That building is getting closer and closer. It's hard to believe that almost 2.5 years ago, Phil and Penny Knight made a $500 million gift to make this $1 billion vision possible. The Knight Campus allows us to dream big about our academic future and reinvent the ways that we think about applying scientific discovery to solve big problems. All you have to do is drive by Franklin Boulevard to see the physical progress that is going on to make this amazing 160,000 square foot facility get ready for its opening next year. Our team has hit every milestone laid out by the Knight Campus plan, and we are really grateful to the city for enabling that to happen. Now, when the vision for this project is fully realized, here's what the impact will be on the city of Eugene, and it will be stunning. 30 new faculty members, principal researchers, and their teams will support 750 ongoing high-paying jobs. 550 new undergraduate, graduate, and postdoc researchers will work within the building. Our faculty will conservatively bring 30% more federal money from research to our community. This will translate into an estimated $80 million a year in economic activity that will be spun off from the Knight campus. And that's before we even think about the companies, the innovations, the technologies, the cures that come from the Knight campus and the work that will be done there. The vision is grand, the vision is audacious, and we are making tremendous strides toward achieving it. Our director, Bob Goldberg, who started work this year, is now engaged in strategic planning. The plan will be done shortly. We're already making offers to faculty to come to the Knight campus. Bob himself is a world-renowned scientist, engineer, who studies muscle and bone growth and development and works on regenerative therapies following traumatic injuries and degenerative diseases like osteoporosis and osteoarthritis. His lab has already come up with new innovations. So the Knight campus is going to be the home of great discoveries. It's also going to be a way for us to link up with Oregon Health and Sciences University that used to be part of the University of Oregon. We've been separate for a long time, and Oregon and the Knight campus will bring us together. We already have 10 teams of scientists doing research together. We're going to begin in the future to offer joint programs, courses, hopefully even degrees, to take the two strongest academic institutions in this state and bring them together. Now, let me round out my comments about the Knight campus by noting that it's recession-proof. The project is fully funded by the generous support of Phil and Penny Knight. The building, the people we hire, the campus, it will move forward regardless of what happens in the economy or in the state with regard to funding in the years ahead. But the Knight campus, importantly, isn't the only initiative that we've launched over the past few years at the university to expand our academic and research capacities. The university has continued to bolster its academic leadership. We have hired all new deans except for one. We've welcomed a new provost, Jayanth Bonavar, to take the place of our great provost, Scott Coltrane, who's sitting over there. We have also sharpened our focus on investing in our academic strengths in promising areas. Let me give you a few examples. We have just launched a data sciences program at the University of Oregon focused on helping us interpret and make sense of the huge amounts of data that come through our lives every day. This will have applications in nearly every field imaginable, from healthcare to science, to linguistics, to business marketing. Also, our College of Education, which is a juggernaut, our College of Education recently received a $32 million grant that will allow our Education and Community Support Unit to continue work helping students with disabilities in this community. It's the largest grant that's ever been awarded to our university, and it's an example of a way in which we can both educate our students, but also help our community at the same time. The university also continues to invest in and carve out a name for itself in innovative and collaborative programs, such as zebrafish research, obesity prevention, neuroscience, sustainable urban design, volcanology, green chemistry, and the list goes on and on. Now, another key priority for the university is diversity and student experience. As I mentioned, our student body continues every year to become more and more diverse. We're not satisfied with where we are. We need to keep working on it. And thanks to the continued advocacy of our students of color, We continue our efforts to recruit underrepresented minorities to our campus and our efforts to make them feel welcome and a part of our community. Now, some of the ways that we've made progress, and again, this is progress. It's not reaching the end point. This is progress to make our community a more welcoming community to our diverse communities are, one, we've broken ground on a wonderful new Black Cultural Center. That will be built over the next year, will open up hopefully by the time next year turns around. We've created a Black Studies program at the University of Oregon. We've revamped our multicultural requirements. We've, for a third time, many of you have probably been at some of these, we've hosted an African American speakers series on campus. We've renamed one of our residence halls in honor of a prominent Black alumnus. And also, we have required every unit on campus to do a diversity action plan. And not a plan that is a big, nice bound volume that you put on the shelf. We didn't want that. What we wanted was we said to each person, give us 6 or 7 goals, and we are going to hold you accountable for those goals every year when we evaluate either the leader, the dean, or the vice president. And that is ongoing right now. We're in year one of that. Now, as we continue to expand our academic offerings, and as we enhance our diversity, we will also modestly increase the number of students at our new campus. And we believe that's important to meet the needs of our community in the state. And we also understand it will be necessary to meet the revenue needs of the university. But as we do that, we are going to be mindful of the impact of that growth on the city of Eugene. We are committed to working with our neighbors and our partners and the city to ensure that we thoughtfully mitigate those impacts, proactively work to mitigate potential challenges to our community. So, at the end of the day, you might be wondering, I haven't mentioned money. All right? But of course, everything that I've talked about, everything costs money. This fall, we extended our fundraising campaign by $1 billion to $3 billion. It is likely that we will hit our original goal of $2 billion sometime either this month or early next month. Now, thanks to the urging and the ambition of our supporters, we are not just going to declare victory. What we are going to do is we're going to up the stakes. We're going to say we've been successful at $2 billion. We're going to go to $3 billion because our priorities cannot be met with $2 billion. We cannot achieve the education that we need for our students, the research that we need to do as a university, the ambition of access and success without additional resources. So a major focus of our new campaign extension is on student success and access. We need additional support for Pathway Oregon. That program has doubled since it began, and it is not supported fully by philanthropy at all. Cost us about $6 million a year. Philanthropy covers maybe $1.5 million. It's coming out of our operating support. We need to raise money for that. We need to raise money for scholarships. We need to reduce the tuition for our nationally ranked Clark Honors College. We need to provide support for our dreamers, students under DACA who are not eligible for traditional financial aid. We need to increase our pipeline programs that help underrepresented and first-generation students understand that they can attend college, Even if they don't come to the University of Oregon and go to another university, we've got to bring them to our campus and put them in classes so they can see they can succeed and that college is not just for the wealthy, but it's for everyone. We need to expand our advising to help our students find their passions and graduate on time. We need to increase our experiential opportunities, our global studies opportunities, and we need to increase and fund our programming for our new Black Cultural Center. So our campaign extension is designed for all of those things. It's also designed to fund a new 60,000 square foot classroom building, which will focus on environmental and sustainability programs. We also need to fund our basic sciences, interdisciplinary programs in the humanities and social sciences, and the Presidential Science Initiative. And the third pillar is we need to complete the Knight Campus, to complete the billion-dollar fundraising effort. Now, we're incredibly excited, we're incredibly optimistic. And when I walk down the street and I talk to people or shop in Costco and people come up to me, I know that excitement is shared by the people of Eugene. But I will say, we face some formidable challenges. My job at the University of Oregon is to provide opportunity for Oregon students to make this university the best it can possibly be. And I have an obligation to make sure that every dollar that we get is well spent. But our operating costs continue to increase. There is no escaping the fact that we are a people-centric enterprise. And those talented and hardworking teachers, researchers, and even administrators, and I know that's a dirty word in some areas, but no place runs without administrators, they expect to earn salaries. They cost money. More than 80% of our budget is people. With PERS and healthcare exploding, those costs exploding, a good portion of our budget is escalating out of our control. On the revenue side, an equally large share of our budget, more than 80%, comes from tuition. But we know that increases in tuition are challenging to our students. So we want to work hard to keep those tuition increases no more than 5%, which is high enough. We must look to our elected leaders to ensure that higher education is better funded to benefit our students, to benefit our faculty, to benefit our states. And to be honest, what we are hearing from Salem this year is not good. It's very concerning. There is no more urgent need than increasing support to education. That needs to include both K through 12 and higher education. We will be making our case in the coming weeks and months. We will ask you to make our case for us. In Salem, we will ask our alumni, we will ask labor, we will ask our employees for more resources for higher education to enable us to meet the higher escalating costs that we don't even control at the University of Oregon. I look to all of you as community leaders, as active participants in our community to help us remind our legislators that having a strong public university, a great nationally renowned public university that is accessible to students from all backgrounds is vital to our community's economy, our prosperity, and our happiness. We welcome your support, and if you would like to help us make the case in Salem, please let me or any member of our staff who is here today know that. These are exciting times at the University of Oregon. These are important times for the University of Oregon and for the community of Eugene. I am honored to lead the University of Oregon during an important era in our evolution and change as the state's premier flagship university. More importantly, I'm eager to build and strengthen our partnerships and relationships with our community, to make the University of Oregon, to make Eugene, to make our region a more incredible place to work, to play, to learn, and to thrive. So I'd like to thank all of you for being here today. Thank you for your attention, and I'm going to look forward. I think there's a 5-minute interim period where you make questions, and I come back and be happy to answer those questions to the best I can. Thank you.
President Schill finished up by talking about relationships with the community. And today's program is an example of the new and growing relationship between the City Club and the University of Oregon. The UO is now a diamond sponsor of the City Club, as you can see by their banner over there. They are allowing us to use the Ford Center on Tuesday the 22nd when we sponsor Governor Brown coming to town, 1 o'clock. I'll talk more about that later. There is a wealth of talent at the university, and we at City Club intend to take advantage of the talent for speakers on topics of interest locally, nationally, and worldwide. Now break for 5 minutes, come up with table questions, and then when you're ready, line up over there. Thank you very much.
Good evening. You're listening to the City Club of Eugene on KLCC. We're broadcasting in HD at KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, and KLBR Bend. We're also streaming online, and you can find the City Club programs on our website, klcc.org. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College.
Can I have your attention, please? We'd like to get started. First question, please.
My concern is that the university has a good capacity for research, but in our community, social services research is practically non-existent, and we really need to have it. We make decisions based on silly things like volunteers going out and trying to find homeless people in the woods and stuff when we could look at the data that's available in the community. Can you help in social service research for the city and county?
So actually, our School of Education does a lot of research working with families kids who are in K through 12. But in addition, our School of Public Policy and Management is already working on some of those issues. We had a number of research assistants have done work with the mayor on homelessness issues and on policy issues. And we work in the Sustainable Cities program with cities across the state. So we do have a number of programs that do research which is designed to work with communities. And I'm just hitting a few of those programs. Now, obviously, we could always do more, and it's something that our students would really love to do because they love to be engaged and gain experience. So it is something that I think would be wonderful. Now, we don't have a school of social work, though, so there's going to be a limit to it. We don't do everything. We don't do everything under the sun at the University of Oregon.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My name is Sean Bowles, City Club member, low these many years. Several questions could have arisen, those dealing with considering education as an industry, the difference between training and education, lack of mentioning academic freedom, but let me focus on one that the table wanted to ask. would you comment on the practice of leasing university property to private developers, entities, for infrastructure building, thus exempting them from public review and oftentimes labor practices, then returning those properties to the university for continued operation and maintenance?
So I would take it what you mean is projects. So we've done a couple projects at the university using what we sometimes call the FIT model, where what we do is we lease the property and then the work gets done.
I am talking about exactly that with respect to, for example, Knight Arena.
And I wasn't here for Knight Arena, but I'll assume that was using that model.
It was using that model.
So that is a model. It's not the only model that we use. The Knight campus, for example, is being done by us, not under a lease, but on some particular properties, in particular properties that are being funded by philanthropy, we do lease the properties. It allows us to get the jobs done quicker. At a higher level of finish in many instances. And what we do is we do follow all of the laws of the city, and we follow labor. I mean, we pay, prevailing wage in those instances. So I'm not sure what you're thinking were.
Well, let's talk about design standards, for example. Are the campus design standards applied to any of these buildings or infrastructure? To the best of my knowledge, they were not with respect to the new proposed racetrack for athletes.
So Hayward Field, I think you're talking about. You would call it a racetrack. That's going to be an amazing development. And what I tend to look at when I think about Hayward Field, the opinions that matter the most to me on Hayward Field are the opinions of the track team and the coaches of the track team, the people who will actually be using Hayward Field, and they're over the moon with excitement about both the design.
I am very happy to hear that. Thank you very much.
And about the way it's going to work.
Next, please.
My name is Kathleen Shorak-Petty, and my question is, and City Club member, could the money, or could a portion of the money that is generated from the new Knight campus be used to reduce tuition for all students?
So do you mean the gift for the Knight campus?
Well, you were mentioning that the Knight campus would produce all this, would generate quite a bit of income, and I was wondering if that could then offset tuition for all students, because I know a lot of incoming freshmen,
right,
it's really difficult to pay the tuition. Could a portion of that money be used to reduce it?
So tuition? I sort of missed, I think we didn't quite understand each other. What I said by income was these are the jobs of people that are working at the Knight campus are going to be adding income to the community. They'll be spending it in stores. We'll be buying things from the community. The university will not be making money on the Knight campus. Now, there may be some companies that are created using the research results from the Knight campus, but those will be owned by private individuals. Okay. So in all likelihood, not owned by the university itself. We may get some return, but generally, if you look at research activities that are monetized on most campuses, it doesn't end up to be very much money. But if we are able to earn some money through companies that we have a retained interest, we'll plow those back into either research or into the operating costs of the university, which then will reduce the ultimate cost to the students.
Well, on that same topic of tuition reduction, is there any process for evaluating all the different departments and where they could save money and use that to reduce?
Yeah, so we've saved millions of dollars in recent years. We've cut, when I became president, we cut our administrative costs by 3%, and you probably know people who've lost their jobs at the university because of that. And so we're always looking. We don't like it. It's not fun. But, if we don't have the money, what we need to do is preserve the education for our students, and we understand that. We don't want to cut jobs because those people are our neighbors here. but we have to make do within our budget. And if we're not funded by the state, and as I said, this year looks like it's going to be a challenge, we won't be able to maintain as much as we would like to maintain. But, you know, one of the interesting things is, I think you may read about it, all of you may read about it, there's this expression called administrative bloat that people like to use a lot when they talk about universities. We've done some benchmarking, and if you compare the University of Oregon to all of the universities that we compare ourselves to, so 60, 70 of the best universities in the country, we operate with 67% of the staff that they operate with. So we are very, very thin. And one of the things that's happened at universities is we are constantly having to hire people to do things that are mandated by the government. And many times very important things, things like Title IX, things like the Oregon Pay Equity Act. We're going to need to hire someone to manage that, to train in things. And so, you know, we have no choice but to hire people. But I think I'm pretty comfortable defending the fact that we utilize our money quite responsibly. We can always do better, and we're always looking to save money. And we have a little SWAT team, which is always trying to save money. There are a number of things that we can't, because of state law, we're not allowed to do to save money, more in the labor area. But that's the way it is. We're a public university.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Had a little stroke back in 2013. I'm a public interest lobbyist, and I've been in Salem for 50 years now. I was maybe 51. And I met people like Mark Hatfield and Tom McCall and Danny Wayne Morse hanging around down here. He was a nice man. I liked him a lot. Also, I met a guy named Robert Liberty down here. And we started the Oregon Student Lobby back then, so the students had a voice. Also, and we were always worried about tuition. We never could keep the tuition down to where many of the less wealthy students could get to school. So a lot of them were forced out of going to college because they couldn't afford the tuition. And I hear it's gotten higher since then. I paid $75 a term when I went to Oregon State back in 1963. With Rich Brooks, got coached a little football here, as I remember, with along with Terry Baker and a guy named Larry Neal. And they made the transition down there. I moved here
please,
now.
Please ask your question.
Yeah, and the question is, what in the hell are we ever going to do about forcing kids out of school that they can't pay tuition? I mean, this is absurd. You guys have this beautiful university, and you're keeping kids like me. I couldn't have gone to school today.
Thank you.
I'm a pharmacist now.
Thank you.
You know, and a lobbyist. But you wouldn't let me go to school if I was here today.
Actually, you might under Pathway Oregon.
Yeah, I know.
But the things that we can do are offer more scholarships to students. We already have Pathway Oregon. Actually, to be honest, where we fail, we actually cover, because of Pathway Oregon, we cover low-income students. It's the next group up that actually there's a problem with. And what can we do to keep tuition low? You can go to Salem and tell Salem, the University of Oregon is among this. Oregon funds its public universities. We used to be second to last. Now we're about 10th from last in the country. But here's the thing most people don't know. Per student, the University of Oregon is funded the worst of all of the state public universities. So if you look at Oregon State, you look at Southern University, you look at OIT, they each get more per student than we do. So go to Salem, tell people that's not the way it should be, that the state's flagship university should be funded equally.
Okay.
And better.
Thank you.
One last question. Do you know where I can find any Oregon State stuff here in Eugene? I've looked all over town.
Maybe I have to go to Portland or Corvallis.
Okay.
Avi Naiman. As a sometime professor of computers and teacher of math, I'm concerned that the American educational system is stuck in a century-old model of teaching content and requiring students to memorize facts and figures. Today, everybody has that at their fingertips, mm-hmm. and the students are bored, silly, and much more interested in learning things that captivate them. Furthermore, industry is complaining that we're not preparing students to go out there and have the analytic skills, the creative skills, the communication skills, to be able to be productive members of industry when they come out of whether it's K through 12 or even university. Now, I know that universities do a great job at research and teaching content, but can you tell us any current or future plans at U of O that will try to address the skills that's needed right. in the industry, especially interdisciplinary skills of analysis?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. And you know, all universities are striving to do that now. One of the big things that a lot of us are doing are experiential learning, is involving students to connect up what they learn in the classroom with internships, either working for government or working for companies, or as part of their classroom doing projects out in the community. And I think that immensely enriches the education. It gives them a chance to take what the theory and the facts and apply them to real world situations. And I think that we're doing that. Every university is striving to do that. Turns out that's also one of the most expensive ways of educating students, because you can't put 100 people in a room, right? You have to give one-on-one individualized education. But it is something that we all recognize is very important, and we're all doing it.
And now the law student's revenge, where he gets a chance to ask the professor questions.
Thank you, Joel, I think. My name is Josh Burstein, a City Club board member, and yes, it was 25 years ago, as I thought back, of spring semester of 1994, that you were my property law professor.
And I didn't used to have any gray hairs, right?
No, you look exactly the same, and I think you gave me a B or a B+, but anyway. I have a follow-up question, too. I got to be the first, or a first questioner when you gave that talk here 3.5 years ago, so I have a follow-up if you remember what we talked about. Now, I mentioned at that time, and I still believe it, that you, frankly, were one of the best teachers I ever had, K-12, college, law school, et cetera. And I asked at that point, how can you become a great research university, but also maintain a focus on teaching? And it's kind of a follow-up to the
right.
previous question. And I want to ask, as a follow-up 3.5 years later, I suppose, when you're recruiting people from out there, when you're looking at tenure decisions, for example, the trifecta of research, teaching, and service, how can you keep a focus that we're bringing in people who are not just good researchers, but good teachers?
So that's a great question, and it's something that is enormously important, because we when I talk to students at the university, I always ask them about their experiences and how the teaching is at the university, and I generally find, probably 90-95% of the time students are really quite happy with the people who are doing the teaching. And what we need to, the way in which you make sure that's happening is to make sure that faculty are evaluated for annual pay increases and for tenure, that it isn't just about research, it is about teaching. Now, one of the interesting things that's happening at the University of Oregon right now is we're trying to understand what the best way of evaluating teaching is, because the sort of evaluations that you used with me, back when you were my law student, we found that those tend to be discriminatory, that students tend to evaluate men, white men, but more generously than women and underrepresented minorities. So we're now thinking about what other ways can we evaluate the quality of teaching, because it is important. We need to make sure it's part of a constant evaluation, and we need that. We need to understand the compensation needs to follow evaluation. So I think those are. It's just you constantly keep that, and it's funny, because when you become president, you agree even more with what you're saying, because the students, we need the students to want to come to the University of Oregon. We need the parents to want to send their students. And frequently, the parents and the students care more about the teaching than they do about the research. And so it's also telling the faculty that both of these things are important. But let me just make one editorial comment.
Sure.
I think that people sometimes don't understand how important research is. We wouldn't have a cure to polio were it not for research done at a university. We wouldn't have the internet were it not for research done at a university. Almost every innovation that happens in the United States is happening due to research. And so we might always say, oh, we only care about, 40, 40, 20, get the students in, get them out. But it's research that solves problems. It is research that grows the economy. It is research that provides the innovation that allows companies to exist. And I actually wish more people in Oregon made that connection.
Thank you. I'm going to have to cut it off. We're running out of time. Before we get a chance to thank President Schill, I would just like to talk to you about what City Club has going the next 2 weeks. On Thursday, we have a program with Springfield City Club at the Hilton talking about Oregon taxes with three former legislators, former Speaker Dave Hunt, Vicki Berger, and Phil Barnhart, talking about Oregon taxes and what we can do about it. Next Friday, we have a Martin Luther King program, Keeping the Dream Alive, Decoding Language, with speakers City Councilor Greg Evans, UO Professor Joe Lowndes, University of Oregon Vice President for Equity and Inclusion Yvette Alex Asenso, and Assistant Director of the OSU Native American Longhouse, Lahui White Bear. On Tuesday, January 22nd, at Ford Alumni Center on the University of Oregon campus, the U of O and City Club are sponsoring Governor Brown coming down at 1 o'clock in the afternoon to talk to us on the same day that the legislature opens. So you be sure you want to be there for that. And on that Friday, the second governor of the week, former Governor John Kitzhaber, will be speaking on his topic dealing with coming away from political tribalism. And if that's not enough, between the two governors at our community spotlight, you'll have a chance to see Eric Richardson grill me for an hour about whatever he wants to talk about. So come on out. That'll be a little bit of comic relief in between the two serious speeches. More details and information about all these programs can be found at cityclubofeugene.org. Now let's thank President Schill for a very exciting talk. Thank you, folks. See you next week.